This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has a critical mission. Managing its technology resources efficiently and effectively is key to the FBI successfully meeting that mission. What is the information technology strategy for the Federal Bureau of Investigation? How is the FBI modernizing its technology infrastructure and ensuring its IT investments align with its overall mission? How is the FBI providing balanced stewardship between information and technology? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Welcome, Chad.
Well, thanks for having me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Alan Heath. Alan, welcome.
Thank you.
Chad, before we delve into specific initiatives, let's start off by learning a little bit about the mission of the FBI. Could you give us an overview on how it's evolved?
The FBI was actually created in 1908 predominantly as an investigative organization for federal crimes. After 9/11, we actually took on quite a few other missions, mostly in the intelligence community. And so now when you look across the ODNI, or the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, you have about 16 intelligence agencies, and the FBI is now one of those big six.
So with an important mission, and you provide some mission support as the Chief Information Officer, can you give us a sense of how the FBI is organized, its geographical footprint, budget, and the number of employees?
Sure. We have about 35,000 employees in the FBI, almost 14,000 of which are special agents. The others are intelligence analysts and the professional staff. We have five branches: the National Security Branch, the Criminal Cyber Response and Services Branch, the Science and Technology Branch, the Human Resources Branch, and then my branch, which is the Information and Technology Branch. We have 56 major field offices across the country. Each of them have what are called resident agencies, or RAs, and offsites. Some are overt, some are covert, and we have over 400 of those. We have about 60 international locations where our legal attachés serve as ambassadors of the FBI to our foreign partners. The overall budget of the FBI is just shy of $8 billion.
So can we switch gears to your specific responsibilities and duties? What are they as the Executive Assistant Director of Information and Technology, and in the FBI CIO? What are your functions? What are the stuff that's under your purview? How do you support the mission of the Bureau?
Well, the FBI, again, has five branches. So as one of the five Executive Assistant Directors, we serve as part of the senior leadership team with the director, the deputy director, and the associate deputy director. So any major strategy decisions or any investments we're going to make are done really at that level. When you look at the role of a chief information officer in the federal government, it does vary from place to place. I feel very fortunate with the backing that I've received from the director and the deputy director that we not only oversee the funds for IT and the policies, but also support the infrastructure and the portfolio of applications that support the various missions that we perform. Right now, of the almost $8 billion that is invested in the FBI for the various missions that we do carry out, about $1.4 billion is spent in the information technology area. My specific roles as a CIO is to provide leadership and a strategic direction, a vision, if you will, for where we're going, is to make sure that we have the right people, the right investments. And then with our portfolio, we have a governance process that includes a board called the Investment Management Board that we vet all major investments in IT projects.
So, Chad, with your CIO responsibilities and duties that you just described, what are the top three challenges that you face in your position, and how do you address those challenges?
Well, I tell you, coming from industry, it's been a little different working in the federal government. I'd say that the hardest thing I think that I face is culture. At the FBI, you know, we have very dedicated people, but we also have a great deal of tenure. And that's amazing given the knowledge that they have. But in that scenario, sometimes it's hard for people to accept new ideas and new ways of thinking about things. And we've had to really put together a program to not only educate and convince our other executives in the FBI, but all the way down to the people that are carrying out the mission day to day. So that cultural transformation, I would say, is probably the toughest thing. I think if you work in the federal government and you deal with procurement, the federal acquisition regulation is also a pretty tough animal to deal with. The FAR, I think, is there to try to provide a ethical and open and fair opportunity to compete for government business. But it has a very difficult time, I think, adjusting to the speed at which IT is moving today. And finally, I think every CIO will say, I don't have enough resources. And so you know, I'm going to join that bandwagon and say that we have great people at the FBI, but we're always looking for more great people. And we're very appreciative of the support that the administration and the Congress has bestowed on the FBI. But we're always looking for more resources so we can actually perform more missions.
Would you describe your career path for our listeners? How did you begin your career and what brought you to your CIO position?
Well, you know, I'm a Naval Academy grad by trade, and I went into the Navy as an ensign. And when I was in a staff meeting one day with a two-star admiral, he actually got up and said he wanted his picture on the internet. This is back in about 1997. I kid you not, I was the youngest person in the room, and he pointed at me and he said, I want you to go make this happen. So as a good ensign, I jumped up and said, yes, sir. I walked out of the room and I went, oh, I'm in so much trouble. So I got on a plane and flew to Norfolk, and my brother-in-law taught me the fundamentals of HTML. He's a graphic designer. I came back a week later and I created a mine warfare site. It had the admiral's picture and bio and the seal and the command ship and dolphins and divers and helicopters and minesweepers. But he loved it so much, he pointed over to a bunch of computers and said, could you make these things talk now? And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. So I've been fighting to get out of technology ever since, and I think I failed miserably. But actually, I served out my 5 years and started my commercial experience up in New York City working for Arthur Andersen. I moved over to J.P. Morgan Chase, where I ran security engineering for the Wintel platform. Got outsourced with about 4,000 people over to IBM, and that's where I took over the virus team for IBM. Got recruited by the CTO and later CIO of Lehman Brothers, and spent a very short amount of time at Barclays Capital before being recruited to come to the FBI.
And Chad, given your experience, what are the characteristics of an effective leader? And more particularly, what management lessons have you learned and brought to the culture of the Bureau from your private sector experience?
You know, we could probably do an entire show on what really you're looking for in a great leader. And I think if you ask 10 people, you may get 10 different answers. But I think it boils down to a few things. First and foremost is your character. Without integrity and transparency, I think you're going to be hard-pressed to be able to get the backing of an organization and people that are entrusted to the mission that you're trying to carry out. The second thing is having a strategy, having a vision for what you want to do, what you want to accomplish, the ability to ask really probing questions, just to challenge the status quo, challenge culture, challenge that the old, you know, well, this is how we've always done it. And I think one of the final things is really caring about what you do. If you don't have that passion that, you know, every morning you get up and you say, I'm going to work and I'm going to do this, you're probably not going to be able to inspire other people either.
What is the FBI's information technology strategy? We will ask Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? How is the Navy strengthening its information dominance for the 21st century? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint and green its operations? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Also joining us today from IBM is Alan Heath. Chad, would you tell us about the FBI IT strategy and the overarching strategic goals that support your mission? How have you modernized and standardized the use of technology across the agency?
We actually have a published IT strategic plan, and it breaks it down into five major areas: infrastructure, information sharing, transforming our workforce, improving IT management, and enhancing that customer satisfaction. The last couple years, we have focused quite a bit in all these different areas, everything from trying to put together a plan to consolidate data centers. Last year, we completed a project called our Next Generation Network. NGN was a complete replacement of the domestic network at over 800 locations in about a 10-month period. We put out all new gear, all new cryptology. We moved to an MPLS design and increased the bandwidth pretty dramatically. We're now finishing out a second major program called Next Generation Workspace, and that's where we actually did the field first because we try to feed the warfighter first, and we're in the process of doing headquarters now. But it's putting out all the latest and greatest unified communication and collaboration tools. So bringing instant messaging, voice over IP, web collaboration, document collaboration into the FBI's classified network. We have had some major wins in our systems management area, information security, project management. You go down the list of things that we set out to do, we've hit them all pretty hard.
Chad, the FBI requires multiple data centers that are geographically dispersed and mutually supportive. Given your efforts around the infrastructure modernization, could you elaborate on your virtualization and data center management strategies? Kind of how are you trying to right-size that IT infrastructure to be more flexible, adaptive, and responsive to the mission?
Well, you can empathize with me that I'm going to be hard-pressed to lay out the addresses of our data centers. However, I will tell you that we probably have more than we need. And recently, we were able to procure data center services. It's a classified contract, so we're not going to talk much about it. But it's a strategy. It's going to enable us in the next fiscal year to consolidate a number of facilities into this one, and also laying a framework that as existing leases or facilities come up for renewal, we'll actually move into our new strategic data centers to try to reduce our footprint. I know Vivek Kundra has been really trying to push this agenda, and I'm a big supporter of it, and I'm glad that we were kind of out in front of this effort.
To achieve your goals and realize your vision requires the right organization. To that end, would you elaborate on your efforts to reorganize the branch that you lead to make it more business-aligned and service-oriented?
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at the federal government and say, wow, you have a lot of stovepipes. At the FBI, it was really no different. But I think the reason why we have those stovepipes is because that's the way the organization was set up. And so we actually started a reorganization effort few months after I got on board, and we tried to turn it more into a service-oriented and business-aligned organization. Now, it was such a dramatic change to the organizational structure that not just myself and the director had to sign off on it, but we had to go and get the Attorney General and the Hill. That has been completed, and I think it's actually allowing us to try to consolidate some of the teams that almost competed for the same type of work. We also added two areas that I always like to talk about. One is a marketing function. And when I tell people that I added a chief marketing officer and a marketing function to IT, I normally get the lost puppy look. You know, what are you talking about? But, you know, we can create the best widgets in the world. If our customers don't know about it, then there's really no value there. And so we need to standardize how we were going to communicate and what modalities. We were trying to standardize on templates for emails and posters and different strategies to get the word out. The other thing we did is we created a group of people called customer liaison officers. And CLOs are two-person teams that actually map off against my major customers. So I pay for them, but I have two for the national security branch and two for the criminal branch and two, you know, on and on and on. And these individuals actually live with the customers, and they communicate from everyone at the very top level, the executive assistant director, all the way down to the people that are just coming into the bureau. And the goal is for them to understand where we're doing well, what we're doing for them that's helping them, but more importantly, where we're falling short. And those CLOs and bring that information back to the IT branch, so we're able to address them. And if the customer has an initiative, that CLO helps them facilitate that project through the governance model, because if you're a customer, you probably don't want to talk to 15 or 20 different people in IT. You want to kind of have that general contractor that can help bring all the things together to make a successful project.
So, Chet, how much of the reorganization that you just outlined, how much of that was inspired by your private sector experience and the vision that you've laid out?
Actually, quite a bit. I've been fortunate to work in a number of organizations, and I've seen some things that have really worked, and you know, I've seen some things that haven't worked very well. And I try to take the lessons learned from a number of different organizations and brought them together. When I actually sat down with my executives, I had a general idea of what I wanted the organization to look like. Now, not down to the detail, but I knew at a high level what I wanted to accomplish. And the first couple meetings didn't quite get the buy-in. And so, you know, we joke about it now, but we met after hours many days. And they finally just wore down and came to light. We were able to bring some really good lessons on things that we had seen work really well. And also, I think by having someone come from the outside, it was an opportunity for people to voice their ideas that maybe they just didn't feel comfortable before. And it was a great opportunity for them to say, hey, look, this is what we think, and we've thought for a while, can we try it out?
Chad, you had mentioned the FBI, the war fighters out on the front line. They obviously carry out a multiple and complex mission, and therefore the information technology requirements in your portfolio reflect that complexity. Could you elaborate on your efforts to foster this enterprise view, break down those silos where it makes sense, and what kind of challenges have you encountered or maybe even foresee in implementing a one FBI vision?
Well, the FBI has so many missions. You know, I remember when I came to the FBI, my understanding of the FBI was built off of folklore, was built off of movies and TV shows. So I had the vision of, well, we go after bank robbers and we go after all these traditional missions. And I really didn't know that the FBI was such a big partner in the intelligence community. But we have all these missions and we have all these customer sets that need very unique solutions. And so the portfolio is very large. One of the things that we do is we have something called the Executive Steering Committee. The Executive Steering Committee is actually chaired by the Deputy Director, and then the five of us that are the EADs are the voting members or the feedback or however you want to categorize that. But we try to, at a very corporate level, look at the top IT investments. And that way we can ensure that where the money is going is where the biggest strategic needs are. Now, one level down is the Investment Management Board, and that's – I chair that. The other EADs are voting members. We have memberships from finance and from legal and from security and so forth. But basically, any IT investment has to come through the Investment Management Board so that, again, corporately, we can kind of take a look at where we're putting our resources. I would say that one of the things that we have tried to do is try to pull as much IT out of the other branches as we can. This would be similar to instead of having finance people in every single part of the organization, maybe you ought to have a consolidated finance group that can have an overall view of where the organization is going, and similar to what we've been doing with the IT branch.
Chad, with those governance changes that you just talked about with your board implementations, you mentioned your chief marketing officer and your liaison officers try to improve the governance. How does that governance enable you to optimize resources across the department?
Well, the Bureau is the largest component of Department of Justice. I work very closely with Van Hitch, who is the department CIO, and the other component CIOs to figure out where we can actually pull our resources together. So the Executive Steering Committee and the Investment Management Board at the FBI is more about trying to ensure that our resources, limited that they be, are going towards the biggest projects are going to have the biggest impact. Now, at the department level, we try amongst the components to pull our resources together. So instead of each of the components trying to really provide the same service, maybe there are some efficiencies that can be gained by pointing one of the components as a leader and letting everyone else buy from that service, if you will. And so we have tried to do that not only within the Department of Justice, but again, like I said, we are part of the Director of National Intelligence, and we do that with our intelligence partners as well.
Chad, I'd like to explore even further the IT capital investment process at FBI and what you've done to maybe strengthen it and align it more towards its mission. Would you be able to sort of give us an overview, maybe a little bit specifically, about how the board interacts and how the operation actually works?
Sure. So in the federal government, your budgets are done 2 years out. So it is difficult to make major changes in strategy outside of that normal finance model, which makes life as a CIO fairly difficult. But within the actual boards themselves, obviously the participants receive prep information before they come. So they should be coming into the board knowledgeable about what we're going to be discussing and actually voting upon. The members of the Investment Management Board and the Executive Steering Committee are all executive assistant directors. So these are five of your top eight executives. And they should know what the strategy is that's come down from the director. They should understand each of their branches and where we need to put resources. And the reason why we have all of them there is that if we're going to put more of our resources towards one branch, that may impact our ability to do investments in the others. And so as a group of executives, we have to make some very tough decisions sometimes to figure out which projects and which strategies we're going to be able to pursue and which ones are going to have to wait until future fiscal years.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about IT security and, in particular, cyber threats. Today, rapidly evolving technology, as you pointed out earlier, increases an organization's IT vulnerability footprint. Would you elaborate on your IT security efforts? More specifically, would you describe the types of cyber attacks or cyber threats you are facing and the steps you've taken to mitigate this continually transforming threat?
So kind of like data centers, this is going to be a very tough topic to talk about. But to try to give a little bit of information, you know, we've really focused in on three areas: our infrastructure protection, data loss protection, and systems management and security tools. In the infrastructure, the next-gen network gave us the ability to standardize all of our networking gear, all of our cryptology. We have invested quite a bit in different tools, and it's very difficult to talk about actual products because we normally start off by saying that any partner or product I talk about is not an endorsement by the FBI, the director, or myself. But we made a very large investment last year in systems management and patch management. We had some really great tools, but they were siloed. And they didn't talk to each other. And so we went out and bought what we believe is a best-of-breed systems management framework and a patch management tool that took 50 tools down to basically two. So when you talk about modernizing the software that we're using, that's wonderful. But by reducing the actual number of tools we have, it also streamlined the environment, made it easier for the IT branch, you know, to manage the assets that we had. With our patch management, again, we went out and procured best of breed. And I'll tell you that we run in the mid to high 90 percentile in patch management, which there's no partial credit. And so, you know, that's a pretty good stat. We have a number of other layers of security that will help mitigate any risks that do exist because we do have maybe one patch that's missing on a box or maybe the definitions are an hour late or something like that. And data loss prevention is one that we're also investing heavily in. You can protect your borders, you can protect your assets, but you really have to go after the data that is important to you.
I want to ask a follow-up regarding the systems, the patch work that you've done. What about the culture? You mentioned culture being a big challenge. What about the culture of making IT security an important and vital asset for the folks that work for you?
So I don't really have that problem at the FBI. I mean, we are an intelligence agency, and so everybody understands the importance of safeguarding our assets and our information. Where culture was an issue is when we were moving from product A to product B. And product A just wasn't doing the job, but that's what people were familiar with. That's what they were comfortable with. So when we bought product B and brought it in, we had the, well, we don't want that. That's not what I'm used to looking at.
That wasn't built here.
And you know, that philosophy of it wasn't built here, we can't use it, mm-hmm. it's really nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not how you build a best-of-breed program. But I'll tell you that, you know, after we got the product deployed, after we started using it, after the stats came back, we quickly got even our naysayers to jump on board and say, you know what, that's fantastic. And what's beautiful about that is that you can't go in and fix everything in a month. You can't fix everything in a six-month period. But success breeds success. It's not so much an absolute destination, but it's a journey. And that cultural change, it takes time. But that was one of the first projects that we did that people actually said, maybe we've got something here. It was a great way for, I think, the branch to take a step in the direction that I wanted to go.
How is the FBI right-sizing its technology infrastructure and making it more agile? We will ask Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance for the 21st century? What are federal agencies doing to be more transparent, participatory, and innovative? And how are federal agencies leveraging technology to improve mission effectiveness? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. The Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine provides insights from those who lead. Hear from Richard Spires, leading Homeland Security's technology effort, Dr. Bobby Braun, advancing NASA's space technology program, Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, strengthening the U.S. Navy's information dominance, and Cass Holloway, ensuring the New York City water system is viable for the next 100 years. All of this and so much more in the Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Also joining us today from IBM is Alan Heath. Chad, from an IT operations perspective, how have you sought to improve project management discipline and structure? What are some of the specific steps you've taken to instantiate better project management discipline in your staff?
Well, one of the things that we have tried to do is professionalize the project management job within the IT branch of the FBI. If we recruit someone from the outside, we're looking for the project management professional or the PMP certification. If they don't have it, we offer it when they get here. I think it's a really good way to at least have the fundamentals on what's going to work and what's not going to work with respect to project management within the federal government. The reorganization helped quite a bit as well, I think, because we were able to bring the project managers under one executive, and that executive was able then to allocate those resources, again, based off of the executive steering committee or the investment management board's decision on which of the projects really needed to have full backing from the organization and the resources allocated to them. And finally, we do project reviews. Some of them are weekly. Some of them are biweekly, some of them are monthly, depending on the size of the investment, depending on the complexity. We have some that we do project reviews every single day. Now, those are ones that are having some issues, and they need a little bit of assistance getting back on track. But through those meetings and the scorecards, we can actually have real metrics to figure out whether projects are doing well or where they need some assistance.
Chad, terrorist attacks, natural disasters, large-scale criminal incidences too often serve as a case study that reveals weaknesses in our information sharing capabilities. Could you elaborate on your efforts to enhance this information sharing across the extended law enforcement community? And how are you moving the culture of need to know towards a culture of need to share?
So the FBI can be broken down into two main areas. One is that law enforcement side and one is the intelligence community. On the law enforcement side, our Criminal Justice Information Services Division, or CJIS, out in West Virginia, do an incredible job facilitating information sharing with our law enforcement partners. We actually have something called Law Enforcement Online, or LEO. And it's a way for us to share information with the other law enforcement professionals around the world. And you got to remember that the FBI is fairly small, with almost 14,000 agents and 35,000 if you add in all of the analysts and professional staff. We're still smaller than some large cities' police forces. And so we really rely on our law enforcement partners, be it other federal, state, local, or tribal law enforcement, do our job. We have partnerships in industry like InfraGuard. We have systems in addition to LEO called eGuardian, where we try to facilitate suspicious reporting. This is probably one of the best ways that we try to share information, not just with us and law enforcement, but between law enforcement and law enforcement on things that probably need a little bit of follow-up on. And I think with the need to know versus the need to share, this is going to be a tough one, especially with things like WikiLeaks and where data has been exfiltrated from organizations. But, you know, we really need to try to foster a culture where people are willing to put their at least their finished intelligence products out for other organizations, because there's no real one organization that does everything with respect to law enforcement or intelligence. It's a collection of organizations that are best of breed in each of their mission areas. And without that information being shared as equal partners, it's going to be very difficult to thwart future attacks.
So I'd like to transition to the Sentinel case management system. Could you tell us a little bit about this next generation system, the planned capabilities associated with it, and more particularly, what are some of the core challenges faced with its development and implementation?
So Sentinel is a program that was envisioned on the heels of the virtual case file. The virtual case file obviously did not turn out well for us, and the Bureau jumped into an effort to modernize the case management system that we call ACS today with the Sentinel program. It was going to be web-based and have a modern document repository and searching capability. The requirements were actually put together in 2004. They were competed around 2005, and our prime contractor, Lockheed Martin, was selected and went to work and has been for the last couple of years. It is meant to provide a system that leads can be set from one field office to another field office in support of a case, or from headquarters out to one or more field offices in support of maybe a domain awareness issue or a national case. It also will provide the agents and the users of Sentinel the ability to create certain documents, collaborate on them, workflow them, and eventually put them into a document management system where we can do some alerting, reporting, and some searching. So recently we started on an Agile approach. Agile is something that has been around for many years. It's a methodology we use in industry and are very comfortable with it. In the federal government, it has been used successfully, but it's not as well known. It's not as prevalent, and it can make some people very nervous. But again, with the right backing, with the right team, with the the right set of stories that you want to try to accomplish, you can do some amazing things.
I'd like to actually dig a little deeper. Could you explain to us what actually is the Agile development? How does it work? Outline some of the benefits of such an approach. And then you mentioned that it has been employed successfully by the Bureau before.
So a traditional waterfall approach to a project is to try to define all your requirements ad nauseum at the beginning of a project. And you try over a period of time to check all these off one at a time. Months can go by, quarters can go by sometimes before the actual end users see any code or any functionality. That's very difficult. That's like trying to sit down with a crystal ball and pick lottery tickets. The Agile methodology tries to break it down into more manageable chunks. So what we have done is we have tried to reduce the number of people on the program to try to reduce as much of the bureaucracy as we can. We've co-located all those engineers in one large room so they can all walk around, talk to each other, jump in each other's cubicles. We have a kickoff every other Monday morning and then a wrap up every other Friday. So these are 2-week sprints that the team actually decides which stories they're going to tackle. And a story is a collection of requirements. So instead of just going down a list and saying requirement 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is what we're going to work on, you take those and you put them into almost like creating a movie. You don't pick up a camera and start filming, right? You have these comics almost that are created to talk about the stories that you're going to try to film later on. And this is very similar to how Agile is done. So these stories are created. The team decides which ones they're going to tackle. And they get 2 weeks to put out another product. At the end of every 2 weeks, you have to have a fully regression-tested system. So at the end of every 2 weeks, you have a functioning system.
Fascinating. Have you ever used it at FBI before?
We have. You know, we didn't actually call it Agile development, but you know, when we look back at some significant enhancements we did with our Conference Human Sources application, we use that methodology. When we there's unfortunately some systems that I would refrain from saying on the program, but sure. We've actually employed a couple times. You know, and it doesn't matter what you call it. It's really important to understand, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and how you're trying to make a project that isn't really just tied to a list of requirements that were arbitrarily selected at the beginning of operation, because business processes change. Yes. And needs change. Technology changes, and you have to be able to adapt. The Agile methodology, if you actually go down the list, it's how we have structured this new Sentinel program. I'm very confident in what we're going to be producing.
Chad, switching gears. Agencies must have effective strategies for retaining intellectual resources and institutional memory, particularly at the Bureau. To that end, could you elaborate on your efforts to promote and institutionalize knowledge management practices and implement an effective knowledge management system?
So we have the Office of the Chief Knowledge Officer, and the Chief Knowledge Officer leads that group who reports directly to me. Over the last 2 years, I've increased the size of our knowledge office eightfold. And the reason why is because we do have a lot of information, and we need to come up with better strategies on how to share information within the Bureau, to share it with our partners, and to capture that knowledge for future use. We actually, over the last 2 years, have put out a number of different things to try to facilitate better communications and collaboration. Our next generation workspace, we talked about earlier, brings not just instant messaging, but voice over IP and desktop VTC and web collaboration to the organization, where historically we've had predominantly email. The SharePoint environment that we have put out has allowed us to have a teaming sites, document collaboration. We're in the process of rolling out My Sites right now, which is almost like taking Facebook and Ancestry.com, like a GUI file system, and jamming it all together. You know, that I think is going to really help people share. We have what we call Bureaupedia, which is actually we used it during the president's transition last year, where we created this Bureaupedia and allow different parts of the organization to contribute information rather than trying to have a central team write all this stuff. And we provided the president's team with a DVD rather than stacks and stacks of three-ring binders. But when you look at, you know, the next generation workspace and the SharePoint and all this stuff that we're doing, what it really comes down to is providing mission functionality. We did the largest FBI operation ever in history of the FBI. It was down in San Juan in Puerto Rico, where we took down 133 people for public corruption. Unfortunately, 93, 95 of them were police officers. However, the entire operation was organized, and all the knowledge sharing that occurred during that, all the situational awareness, was done using all the unified communication collaboration tools we have deployed over the last 12 to 18 months. The director was so happy, actually demoed that to the attorney general. So the next morning, suffice to say, I was in the director's meeting like I'm in every morning with a smile the size of a Cheshire cat. But, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to facilitate unified communication collaboration. We're trying to facilitate knowledge management. And I know that our chief knowledge officer is working to network with other knowledge officers in the federal government and in industry to get best practice and see if there's things that we can do even better.
Chad, outside of the Bureaupedia, the SharePoint, the other initiatives that you have going in the knowledge sharing space, then how else are you advancing the deployment of analytics capabilities across the FBI enterprise?
So you can appreciate that we have quite a bit of data at the FBI, given the different missions that we perform and the different authorities that we have been given. We actually had something that our chief knowledge office spearheaded called Data Pointer. And Data Pointer was a way to let people know where data was based on the type of content that they were looking for. It's a pretty simple idea if you think about it. You say, well, I'm looking for email because I have this email that I need to search on. But if you don't know where the repositories are and you don't have the permissions to them, those repositories aren't going to be helping you with your case. We have a major initiative now called DIVS, and that's the Data Integration and Visualization System. This is something that the director allowed us to commission. Six of the top eight executives meet once a week on this. It's bringing the entire organization together to try to create a federated search across all of our repositories and then to layer analytical tools on top of it to try to help our intelligence analysts and our agents better connect dots.
Chad, you've mentioned before that the service you provide to the components that make up the FBI are customer-centric type tools and mission enablers. Would you elaborate even further how you've enhanced customer satisfaction and more particularly, how have you been more responsive to the needs of your components?
Well, one of the things that I've done is I've gotten out to the field and talked to people. You know, of our 56 offices, I've been to 27 in the last 24 months. We've been to a number of conferences and other locations as well. But getting out and talking to people about how they do their job, what they like as far as the tools that we've provided them. And mostly what's really important is figuring out what they don't like and what they don't have. But trying to understand how they do their work gives me an ability to try to figure out where we need to adjust strategy, where we need to do some acquisitions. We have quite a few metrics that we capture for our global help desk. We have metrics for specific projects. You know, we look at those. We try to figure out, again, it's nice to get the positive feedback. Everybody loves that. But what's really important is where people are not happy, because that's where you know you need to go and attack those problems, because the men and women of the FBI are doing important work. And my job is to make sure that they have all the tools at their disposal, you know, to carry those missions out.
What does the future hold for information technology at the FBI? We will ask Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. This is the Center This Week, highlighting the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness. I'm Michael Keegan, Managing Editor of the Business of Government magazine. The Center This Week is our opportunity to inform and, most importantly, to invite you, our listeners, to use the IBM Center for the Business of Government as your resource, a how-to resource for improving government effectiveness at the federal, state, and local level. First up, At the Center, Moving to the Cloud, An Introduction to Cloud Computing and Government by David Wild. Published by the IBM Center for the Business of Government. The term cloud computing has at its core a single element. Computing services are delivered over the internet, on demand, from a remote location rather than residing on one's own desktop, laptop, mobile device, or even on an organization's server. For an organization, this would mean that for a usage fee, it would contract with a provider to deliver applications, computer power, and storage via the web. What will be the impact of cloud computing? And how can it deliver on its promise? Chief information officers report spending over 40% of their time and 60% of their budget on delivering routine services to their organizations. These routine services are what cloud computing can deliver cheaply and easily. Dr. Wild's report looks at specific case studies of how cloud computing is being used presently across the public sector. It looks at cloud projects taking place within General Services Administration, NASA, and the Department of Defense. It also looks at cloud computing efforts internationally, with specific focus on the G-Cloud and the Digital Britain project in the United Kingdom. The report examines 10 challenges facing government leaders as they work to integrate cloud computing into their IT strategies. Some of the challenges facing government leaders are the need for scalability, the need for high reliability, the need for securing data in the cloud, and the need for open standards and interoperability. Dr. Wild also offers a cloud migration strategy. Step 1, learning. Both techies and non-techies need to understand cloud computing and the potential it holds. Step 2, organizational assessment. Understand your real IT utilization and how cloud-based storage, applications, and processing power might replace and supplement present IT capacity. Step 3, conduct a pilot project to test how clouds work for your agency and with your existing technology and people. Step 4, conduct a cloud readiness assessment. Determine where cloud can and cannot be used as part of your organization's overall IT portfolio. Step 5, develop a cloud rollout strategy. integrate cloud offerings as part of the agency's overall IT approach. And step 6, continuous cloud improvement. Moving to the Cloud, an Introduction to Cloud Computing and Government by David Wild addresses the use, challenges, risks, and prospects for cloud computing in the government. You can download a copy of the report by going to businessofgovernment.org, and there you can find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Management of government projects, programs, and portfolios, and the related expenditures of public funds are major visible areas of interest and concern. Despite a growing stream of successful program and projects, failures continue at an alarming rate. Pick up the latest Center report, Project Management and Government, An Introduction to Earned Value Management, and find out how this powerful methodology can make your projects more successful. You can order or download a free copy of this and all of our Center reports at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Also joining us today from IBM is Alan Heath. Chad, I talk with many of our guests about the use of collaboration and partnership among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. Would you tell us how you're leveraging partnerships to improve IT operations or outcomes? And how do you envision these partnerships changing over time?
Well, given that the FBI has one leg over on the law enforcement side and one leg over on the intelligence side, we actually try to do quite a bit of information sharing with components in each of those areas. I sit down with the CIOs of the intelligence community, and we talk about how we can leverage each other's investments. If it's done in one place, do we really need to replicate that same whatever it is in 16 others? Probably not. The same thing within the Department of Justice. The CIOs meet to try to figure out, again, where we can leverage each other's investments, where we need to move data around for, let's say one of the components collects it, but another one needs it for their mission. You know, how do we facilitate that? With industry, we do have programs around information security. The InfraGuard is a perfect one, a perfect example. Within the IT branch, one of the things that we're just starting now are we're calling Vendor Days. It's an easy way to put out a call in a very public forum to say, hey, look, you know, this is something that we're interested in pursuing. Anyone that has something to add, please come to this location at this date and this time. And show us your wares. We'll have IT engineers there, and then from there, we'll be able to down select certain solutions that we're going to bring into our labs.
Do you see collaboration and partnerships driving innovation?
Absolutely. There is not enough IT investment at every single agency to do everything uniquely for themselves. You need to find those organizations that are passionate about something, that have demonstrated excellence and a willingness to share that either process or product or what have you. And I think that by getting these different organizations together, we can really figure out how to get the biggest bang for the buck for the resources that we do have.
Chad, given the Bureau's critical mission, it requires technical skills, expertise, and diverse competencies. To that end, what are you doing to ensure you have a well-trained and technical workforce to meet your mission challenges? And how are you expanding the IT workforce initiatives?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that the IT branch at the FBI is always recruiting. And we are looking for those individuals that can receive a top secret background and can pass a polygraph. And if you're one of those people, we invite you to come on down because we're a lot cooler than the CIA. But in seriousness, we're always out there recruiting and we're trying to make sure we bring people in with the right skill sets. But that being said, we also try to cross-pollinate between IT professionals and the people that we're trying to serve. So, over the last 2 years, I've brought special agents into the organization, some that actually have good technical skills because they're cyber agents or tech agents, and some that we bring in just for their leadership skills or for their perspective on the solutions that we have either deployed or are thinking about putting out to solve different problems. And that cross-pollination has actually been quite successful. One of the things that we do within the branch is once a year we hold a training event. And we move around the country so that people aren't always flying to one coast or the other. But we bring in about 50% of our IT specialists into one location to go over the mission, to go over the vision on where we're going, and to do hands-on training on the new gear that we're going to be rolling out in the next 12 months. And then those individuals are supposed to go back and train the people that didn't have the ability to come to that event. And so we hold it yearly, and so far it's been very successful.
So, Chad, along those lines, there's a perception that the government lags behind the commercial sector in technology innovation. First, do you think that perception is accurate? Second, how do you think government could enhance its position to become a leader and driver for innovative technologies?
Well, does the government lag in technology? In some areas, yes. In some areas, no. Unfortunately, the areas I think that we're the most progressive in are the areas that would be very difficult to talk about on the program. But having been at the Bureau for 2 years, I have a much better appreciation for the capabilities that the intelligence community can bring to bear on issues that we face. In other areas, we do lag. The thing I attribute this most to, one is just a culture of, well, that's how we've always done it. And that's something that we've been trying to change over the last 2 years. And the Federal Acquisition Regulation, you know, and I know that people don't like to talk about it. But, you know, if you're a CIO and it takes you a long period of time to get something out for an immediate need, that's not optimal. When, you know, the interpretations of the FAR differ depending on who you ask, that's also probably not optimal because it just makes life very difficult to figure out, you know, what you can and can't do, what you can and can't say. Now, the FAR is there to try to provide an ethical way of doing procurement, an open environment, and that's admirable, but it does make life difficult as a federal CIO.
Well, Chad, I'd like to transition to the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges your organization will encounter in the future, and how do you envision your office evolving to meet those opportunities and succeed over those challenges?
Well, I'll tell you that the only constant is change. Yeah, and at the FBI, it seems like we're given new missions and new things to tackle almost on a daily or weekly basis. And so it's very difficult to try to predict exactly what we're going to be doing 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, 50 year from now. But I think that, you know, we have some great leaders at the FBI. We definitely don't have shy customers, so they're always willing to tell us what they like and what they don't like, and that's fantastic. What we really need to focus on are the people. We need to recruit more people. The FBI is facing the same challenges with retention that a lot of government agencies are. We have quite a few of our people that are going to be moving on in the next couple of years, and that's a pretty large void or opportunity. And that's something that we're going to really have to focus on is attracting the right people to come in and carry out the missions. And really, I think that the FBI is in a great position because we have such a great history. We have such a great reputation. We have great missions. And the FBI operates as a family. And so when you look at opportunities, when you look at culture, when you look at pride in what you do, hopefully we're going to attract some of the best and brightest.
Well, I want to follow up actually on the issue of retaining, retention, and recruitment. Are you working with the HR folks, the human resources folks within FBI specifically to attract the right people?
Yeah, so we do have obviously a centralized HR branch, but within each of the branches we have HR professionals. One of the things that we did about a year and a half ago is we put together our own recruiting team. Now, we did this in partnership with the HR branch But we actually went out and canvassed our own people and we said, how many of you want to do your job and, oh, by the way, do more? How many of you want to be recruiters? We actually had a lot of people. And so we had to go through a screening process. We actually got down to five. And those individuals received specialty training from the HR branch on how to recruit and the different requirements. We sent them out to different career fairs. We sent them to universities. And we got more resumes of qualified people than you could shake a stick at. I'll tell you, though, that we were able to also change some of our own processes because normally you have a position, you have to identify a handful of people that are potentials because with the requirements of the background check and the polygraph, only a portion of those are going to make it through that process. But by trying to change it from, okay, you know, we're going to have four people in a row, and if number one has issues, then we'll go to number two, and if they have issues, then we'll go to number three, that's a very serial process. What we did is we created what we call the bullpen. And the bullpen was every qualified candidate that we had was put into one bucket. And as any of them passed, we picked them up and we put them in front of our top five people. I have three assistant directors, the chief knowledge officer, and my section chief for administration. And we try to match the person's background and their motivation with where we have the biggest critical hire within the branch. And by changing that process, we were able to put more people into seats and draw down our number of positions from a couple hundred to now to about two dozen.
Well, that's a wonderful segue into the next question that I have as we close our conversation today. What advice would you give a person who's interested in a career in public service?
Well, you know, there are a lot of opportunities to serve. I personally would recommend trying to find an organization or a mission that you really believe in, that you can be really passionate about. I get up every morning, I drive into work, and I'm thinking, I'm going to do this and this and this and nothing classified, but I get home and I tell my wife about all the great things we're doing, and she makes fun of me because she says I sound like the Charlie Brown teacher. But, you know, you have to have passion. I think after you do that, you can kind of research the skills and the experiences that you need to be, you know, one of the top tier candidates for that organization, for that role, and put yourself out there. You know, a lot of people are hesitant to apply to different agencies or different jobs. I've learned a long time ago that you lose 100% of the requests you don't ask. So you just need to go for it. And finally, you do have to understand that some of the government positions do require these background checks. And so I would recommend living a good, clean life and staying out of trouble. But there are sacrifices that come with service. But it's a wonderful, wonderful organization the FBI is. You know, I love what we do. I love our people. I love our missions. And it's exciting to come to work every day.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today. But more importantly, Alan and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, I appreciate that. And thanks for having us. Hopefully, I was able to give you some information on what we've done over the last 2 years since I joined. And I think we have some really great things that are going to be coming over the next 12 to 24 months. The only thing I always like to end on is if you are in the military or if you're in law enforcement, I just want to thank you for your service and have a great day.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Chad Fulgham, Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. My co-host from IBM has been Alan Heath. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
What role does the Federal Labor Relations Authority play in fostering stable labor management relations? How is Federal Labor Relations Authority revitalizing, reinventing, and re-engaging itself? And what does the future hold for the Federal Labor Relations Authority? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these and other questions with his very special guest, Carol Waller-Pope, the chairman of the Federal Labor Relations Authority, FLRA.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.